We were talking about what happened to Louie, Lookout Louie. He went AWOL for a little bit, but they thankfully found him near the stadium. And we're kind of wondering, does anyone know where Rusty was at that time? Not saying it was malicious, but, you know, maybe he took him out to play and they stayed out past curfew. And the other thing is, do we need to get a security team to follow Rusty around?
I want to know if they do have taken proper security precautions to ensure Rusty's safety.
Yeah.
Since there seems to be a spree of mascot kidnappings.
Because he's adorable, really. He's adorable.
Actually, guys, I had a chance to interview Rusty about this exact thing. If you don't mind, I wouldn't mind playing it right now. All right? Okay, here it is. It's not long. Okay, so I am live with Rusty the Red Wolf. Rusty, can you give us any insight into what happened with your fellow mascot, Louie?
So Louie was taken, as we all know, and it sent shockwaves through the entire mascot universe. And quite frankly, it's a little scary out there. But I just want to say from myself and all the League One mascots that are out there, we're glad to have you back.
So let me ask you this. Has there been any talk of extra protection detail for you in the upcoming season or anything like that that you guys are going to be doing differently?
You know, that's a great question. And the fact is, Louie has been in Chattanooga significantly longer than me. He is a staple of the community and someone that should be protected. And I will say, you know, he's a bit of a disadvantage because he's a baseball. And if you come after me, just realize, I'm not a baseball. I'm a wolf.
Soccer chat with two T's, because we're going to chat about soccer, but we're also in Chattanooga. So it's like a play on words. And, you know, Chattanooga is a soccer city.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 27 or something of Soccer Chat. I am your host, Alex, here with our producer, Adam, and our senior correspondent, Jeff Wolfman Combs.
Get off my lawn.
So, a lot of exciting things have taken place since our previous episode. We've got an exciting interview with Kevin Sawchak coming up. But let's dive right in and let's look at what's happening with League One. The schedule is out. Actually, this Saturday, the very first game of the season is happening. Fort Lauderdale hosting New England Revolution 2 at 7:30. So the Red Wolves schedule, of course, is out as well. First game of their season is going to be on May the 8th as they head to North Texas. And then their home opener will be Saturday, May 22nd against Fort Lauderdale. So, guys, what are you excited to see in this League One schedule? Who are the Red Wolves games that you guys have circled that you're excited to see?
Well, I think the first one is the first one because I'm so excited to get back in the stadium. So I got to say that May 22nd, Fort Lauderdale at CHI Memorial is the first one I have circled for obvious reasons, but it really is going to be, I'm really excited to for this new season to kick off.
Yeah, for me, it's more, I don't think that's a game where we're going to get an idea of how good we are. I think North Texas last year had a really slow start. I'm fully expecting that to happen again. Then we have, you know, New England. We have Inter Miami too. I think our first chance to really get an idea of how good this Rebels team is going to be is that Richmond Kickers game on the 29th. Because, you know, the Kickers just played North Carolina FC. And granted, North Carolina FC said that they had trialists and academy players playing in the friendly. But they just beat them 4-0. So, also, the Richmond Kickers have a former trialist of the Red Wolves that I liked a lot in Cam Vickers, and I'm expecting big things from him. So that's the game I've got circled as my first one.
Well, the Kickers are playing 1, 2, 3, 4, five matches before we play them, when we're going to only play the one. And of course, they're going to be playing North Carolina for reals, for keeps, the week before. So it's I think the kickers are really going to be primed, so it'll be a really good contest.
That's one that I had circled as well, just thinking about how last season ended, last game of the season, us putting them out in the stoppage time of the game. So I expect them to be geared up and our fans to be excited and primed. We'll have already hosted a match at the stadium, so folks will be focused on the game and not just kind of on what kind of new things have happened at the stadium. So that's one that I'm really excited for. And I think the other one is when we take on Omaha. Again, it's another one. July 3rd is going to be at Werner Park. The Red Wolves will be coming out of the bullpen to take on Omaha. And I'm excited to see that one as well. You know, a lot of juice in it. And so I think it's just going to be exciting to see those two teams square off and get an idea of if Omaha has truly improved their team or if last season's finish was just kind of a fluke.
You see, I picked Omaha for my second one, but I picked the August 21st because that's when Omaha comes back and we've got some unfinished business there. And so that's why I picked August 21st. I think it's, you know, we would be all warmed up and just really make sure Omaha knows that we are the Red Wolves and we own our den.
Well, and it's under the lights. So that's the other fun part there, right? No, I mean, in all seriousness,
I don't know if it'll be true or not, but I've asked the front office to play that game at noon anyway, just out of spite.
Oh, that would be funny.
That would be awful.
You know, in all honesty, though, you know, one of the things that is fun to engage in, as long as it's done in a manner that's meant to be fun, is some of the banter that you get back and forth. And, you know, Omaha has had their joy and their fun with us on the lights and with Greenville's trying to claim that they need an asterisk. And then, you know, Greenville fans have come back and said, hey, you guys are the ones who broke protocol, and it's the reason why you couldn't play. So that's kind of fun to watch that banter. The fan base has done a really good job of making themselves someone that the other fans want to play against. Whether that's I want to play against you because we want to beat you, I don't know if that's probably the best way to do it, but it's what they've done, right? Forward Madison fans were the same way. You create interest just because of how often you're involved in the banter, right? Like nobody really talks about North Texas that much. They won the league the first year, and they were very competitive the second half of last year. No one talks about it, right? Because they just don't have the fan base that brings it in. Same sort of thing with Richmond. Like, Richmond fans are pretty quiet for the most part, right? They've been around forever, like, to the point where they signed a player whose dad played for them in the past, right? So is not a knock. That is a compliment, right? But they've been around forever, and they don't have that same sort of presence. Maybe because all their fans are boomers. I don't know. But they don't have that same type of like online presence of banter. They've got the Henny Derby, which I think has done really well between them and Ford. But even then, like nobody says, I hate Richmond fans, right? Like even when their fans were like giving our players the finger for beating them, I didn't hate them. I just thought it was unclassy, but I didn't hate them, right? It's the same sort of thing. Like Omaha has become like that hated fan group because they picked the most random things to focus on. Like, your team didn't have lights during a pandemic when there may have been issues with getting things done because of limitations on how often people can be working and how long they can be working and manufacturing. But we're going to ignore all that and focus on the lights. Or we're going to rip on your team because our team failed to follow protocol. We're going to call your team an asterisk. Like, they're dumb things, but at least they're doing them, right? So that's why I'm interested in both that Omaha game. And I'm interested in the Richmond game because I really think their team's going to tell us. So those are my two as well.
Well, I think that Richmond's going to be working on charging up their fan base. Did you know they now have either they now have a mascot or they've had a mascot? I never heard about it. They have a kangaroo mascot.
Yeah, they've had that.
How did I not know? Which means that, you know, he's got to work on his social media presence. So maybe Rusty could give him some lessons because Rusty kills it online.
So what are two games, non-Red Wolf games, that you guys are looking forward to watching?
Okay, I got one on, I think this Saturday night, and it's just for the fact, the very obvious fact, it's the first real game of the season. Fort Lauderdale is hosting New England. I know it's two sides, but it is the first game, so it's the first start, and so there's something about the opening match.
That really is the only reason anyone's interested in Fort Lauderdale versus New England 2, right? Like, it's because it's the first one, right? For me, the game I've got circled that I'm looking forward to most is the Greenville Triumph versus Omaha rematch, because the Omaha fans are focused on their win in the regular season last year, trying to claim like that matters when, honestly, Greenville already had the top spot wrapped up. I'm looking forward to that game. I think that's going to be a fun watch. I think both those teams, honestly, I think Greenville's just reloaded, and I think Omaha may have added, you know, that one extra level by having, you know, my man up top, which is heartbreaking to see, but I think Greg Hurst is going to make a massive impact for them. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that matchup.
Well, the other one I've got is July 17th in the I want to see North Carolina in Toronto. And the reason I mentioned those two teams is I felt like these are two teams that we don't know as much about going into the season. Of course, that could totally change by July. And Toronto is coming back after a year out, not by how they wanted. And North Carolina is coming in from championship and still trying to get a good gauge on their team. So I'm more curious about the 17th to see how these two, it's like the wrestlers coming into the match where both of them are from parts unknown. So
let me ask you, when we talk about North Carolina FC, what do you think about the fact that they signed 15 players to academy contracts? Like, do you have any fear that what they're going to throw out there this year is just a bunch of academy players with the occasional pro thrown in, or do you think they're going to put together a real team?
I think people laughed a lot when North Texas signed a couple teenagers named Albert Damu and or Damus and Ricardo Pepe, and it worked out pretty well for them. So you know, I think I made a joke on back channels to someone about, you know, that's a good way to save your club some money is to move down to League One and sign a bunch of academy kids to academy contracts. But I think we laugh at them at our peril, because it could be a gamble that pays off. We've seen a lot of teams with youth really surprise people in this league.
If that's what they're depending on, Adam, then I think they're going to be in for a very painful awakening. If it was difficult in championship, but if you come out not prepared in League One, we will embarrass you. And not just us, but the other teams in League One. I suspect that they are supplementary characters, that these are investments for the future. And I don't know what their finances are, but they don't have a lot of time to get some people signed, but they've got to do it quick, some serious players.
Well, that's the thing. Like, they don't even have their 2021 roster available to you to know, like, who have they fully signed? And that's where I'm sitting here going, like, what's going on with this team? Like, do we know anything other than those academy players? And I can't find anything about, like, what their team's doing, who they're signing. And that's the thing that's got me worried.
Well, last year we had a similar thing with Fort Lauderdale. We had no idea what the team was called, and their logo was the USL League One logo. And we joked about that. And it did take a while for them to gel, but that's a new team. So this is a team, yes, they're coming into League One from championship, but they're a known quantity. You know, they've been doing this for years, and that is a real head-scratcher for me, is either they've signed and they've not announced, and that's part of their strategy, or, I don't know, or they're just trying to just save money this year.
So, I mean, I think we've done a lot there. Of course, we've got big news with the team in announcing the signing of academy player Christian Zaragoza. You know, real exciting to see this academy paying dividends in the fact that there is actually a player joining the first team. I know that's something they've talked about since last year, but it actually coming to fruition. So what do you guys think about Christian Zaragoza joining the team?
I'm excited. I think this is one of the most exciting news I've seen our side do. This is it's historic. We're the first ones in USL to do this. He's from Dalton High School. We've been talking ever since Chattanooga Red Wolves started that we're from an area that is a soccer community. And it wasn't just CFC, but from Dalton High School and Bryan College and, you know, from the other colleges around, that we have a culture through this. So to see someone rise up through the ranks to sign for first team is fantastic.
You're talking about coming from Dalton High School. And,
yes.
I mean, Dalton High School is a nationally ranked high school team.
Yes.
And so, you know, they the sort of team that would give NPSL clubs a run for their money. And so he's definitely going to be a player coming with quality. You'll get to hear a little bit about how he's done with the club since this signing was announced from Kevin Sochak. Adam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, he's a 17-year-old kid going to a really good quality program at NC State in the fall is when he goes, you know, heads off to school. And there's a lot to be said for that alone. Like he's, you're getting somebody who isn't just recognized by our academy as having strength, but he's recognized by one of the top programs in the nation for soccer as well. So you know already he's a great young talent at 17 years old. I look forward to seeing, you know, him on the field, but it's more of the ability he has now to train with the professionals and what that can do for his career. You look at the old NPSL and UPSL and some of those college type leagues that, you know, like what CFC was in before moving to NISA. And it was a 6-week program, but a lot of times you were playing with either people who couldn't make it as pros or were other college kids. This is a totally different type of training. And I think the impact just alone that can make for that kid, regardless of what he does for the Red Bulls, is amazing. And it's something that we should take a lot of pride in. I think it's different even than what we talked about just a moment ago with North Carolina FC and they're signing 15. I think we could have probably signed a number of other academy products if we wanted to do it in a manner that was like, look at all the people we've signed. I think we did it intentionally with the idea of we're only going to sign those that we could see having an impact down the road for our team, whether it's this season or in the future. And I think that says a lot for the young man.
Well, when we talked with Coach Jimmy in the past, I get every indication that he has no patience for people who are not going to be competitive. If you're on his team, you're going to be there, and he expects you to win, to fight, to contribute. And so, there's no place on the Jimmy Oblata roster for someone who's just a chair filler.
So, moving on to other team news, we've got upcoming friendlies. This coming Saturday is going to be at home, open to all the season ticket holders. Kickoff at noon. They're playing Atlanta United 2. What are you guys expecting to see as they take on Atlanta United 2?
Well, I'm really excited to see some of our newer players. And having watched preseason friendlies in the past, I know it's not always indicative of what we're going to get on the field. But I am really – I want to see how these new pieces come together. I'm expecting a very pushing offense. I think you're going to see a return to speed, and I think we're going to be trying to constantly push the ball right up their necks.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Like the expectation is as this team goes into its second year, when you talk USL, second year is really – for a new coach is really where you can tell the coach has fully got their stamp on the team. You know, the contracts are typically a 1-1. And so in this situation, all the players that are here are ones that Coach Jimmy wanted and Coach Jimmy selected. And so I think we fully see his vision. And that's what I'm looking most forward to, is seeing that vision on the field.
I think it's going to be Atlanta. You know, we've played them 3 times now, preseason friendlies. They're a team that, you know, not usually the strongest in USL Championship, but not the team that's usually raking the bottom of someone that, you know, they want to necessarily, talk about relegating. it's a they're going to bring a lot of youth, a lot of younger kids from the Atlanta Academy that maybe they're thinking of giving a shot. So I think it's also going to be kind of an open game that's going to be really exciting to watch. If Jimmy is committed to coaching the team, you know, to push and to try to go at the other team and create goals, it's going to lead to a very open match and be a lot of fun for the season ticket holders to watch. Also, in the next week, they're going to be playing at Birmingham. What do you guys think of that match coming up?
Well, this is our, third time to be playing against the Legion again. It's one of those where I think we do match up well. And if we ever end up in championship, I think that would be a natural rivalry for us. I think Birmingham's a little scrappier than we are, but I still think we're still going to have that pushing attack.
Yeah, and a Birmingham Legion played, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, they played CFC recently in a friendly, did they not?
Yes.
And they played pretty tight. So it'll be interesting to see what that looks like just from, you know, two local teams both playing the same team during the preseason. We're a little bit further down the preseason, so you would expect Birmingham's team to be a little bit closer to what they're actually going to be putting on the field. But I think it'll give us a bit of an insight into, you know, how do we stack up against that competition, and how does that competition stack up against like a Nisa-style team, which unfortunately we're not going to get from the Open Cup this year because of, you know, all the changes they had to do due to COVID, where really it's just Greenville representing League One. It's just Detroit City representing Nisa. And so we don't get a chance to really fully see what that looks like unless they somehow end up playing each other, which would involve a lot of upsets. So that's kind of gives us a little bit of insight into, you know, how well do we stack up compared to some of these other teams that are Nisa level teams, you know, which division has that. And so that's kind of the weird outside part that I'm interested in as well.
Very good. So we'll all three of us be at the stadium. Look for, you know, pasty fat guys and just say Adam or Jeff or Alex and we'll say hey and thank you for listening. I think it's time for us to transition. We've got assistant coach Kevin Sawchak joining us to talk a little bit about what's been going on in preseason and what they expect to see from these upcoming friendlies. All right, folks, we are joined by assistant coach Kevin Sawchak with the Chattanooga Red Wolves. Coach, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Anytime, I love chatting with you guys, and it's always a pleasure.
So looking at last year and kind of at reviewing everything, what would you say was kind of the biggest area that you grew, you know, your first year kind of professional coaching?
Wow. Just kick it right off, huh?
Yeah, we go hardcore right at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Man, you know, I think organizationally and like long-term planning, being able to plan, like weeks and weeks ahead, talking about like training cycles and how we're going to get the guys ready for maybe, you know, a two match week, maybe 3 weeks in advance, and what kind of that situation is going to look like, you know, monitoring players and then also changing things on the fly. Because as much as a long-term plan is going to help with injuries and with, you know, schedule changes and all that stuff, we always have to adapt. So I think, you know, just organizationally that we've, you know, me especially, I've gotten a lot, maybe a lot cleaner in what I do and more prepared, probably, I would say.
So as you're looking back as well, you know, obviously last year was a season unlike any other, but being your first season as a professional coach, what was something where you were just like, wow, I didn't really expect this to be something I'd have to, you know, worry about or deal with?
I think, you know, I was surprised how much week to week changes some teams would do, tactically. You know, we would do a lot of film last year and, you know, we would play North Texas, and then the second time we played them, it was completely different. So just keeping up with their changes and trying to prepare the boys as best we can week to week. You know, I was surprised how much that changes. You know, in the youth game and the different levels I worked at, it's been more about your team and your kind of playing game model. And, you know, but now when it's so result driven, you really have to prepare the guys every week as best you can for what you think the opponent's going to do, on top of, you know, how your game model is going to kind of hurt them.
So you mentioned the youth game, and of course there's been some big news with the Chattanooga Red Wolves Academy. Yeah. One of the first things coming out of the winter is kind of a launching an a IDP program. Talk a little bit about what it is that the IDP program with the Red Wolves Academy is and what you guys are hoping to do with it.
Yeah, so similar to a lot of the top academies around the world, there's a talent training group where, you know, academies, they identify the top players in their program, players that they see have the most potential to maybe make that jump to the first team. And so they want to get more hands-on training with those players. So the idea with the IDP is to identify the best players, the top most talented players in the academy, and then offer them more training with first team staff around and with first team guidance around. So we're able to keep tabs on them and also, you know, support them individually outside of their normal team training. Cause I think that's an area that coaches don't have time for. So to be able to kind of pinpoint, especially with the older players, areas that they need to develop in and then work with them outside of their normal training schedule to get them ready for that jump if they're able to make it.
So what kind of things are you looking? I mean, I did a few of them with my son when it got put out there, but what are some of the things that you guys look for that you have them do?
So I think it's different for the different age groups. So the idea is, think it was, we started 15s and above. It's very individual. You know, we're looking at kind of the special attributes. I think that's kind of what helps players make it to the next level or not. So we look for the players in the academy that have a good base, but then have that special attribute. So maybe it's a physical ability, maybe it's a technical ability, but we look to find whatever that is and then help them enhance that and maybe work on a few of their individual maybe weaknesses. So, you know, for an example, there was a few wingers in the academy that we really liked, so we wanted to do a little bit of extra work with them on crossing and on 1v1 situations and just give them more repetitions on things that we think they would need to improve at in order to make the jump to the first team.
Now, and I know.
And then I was just going to say, then with the younger ages, a little bit different. You know, the younger ages, we focus a little bit more on overall general concepts. So we want to develop the individual holistically. So physically, tactically, technically, we kind of try to give them a base of everything week by week so that we just gave them the best chance to kind of make that jump to the older training group when they got there.
I know this year we're going to be having Dalton Red Wolves back, and that's our U23 team. And I'm assuming I'm hearing that they're going to be playing their matches at CHI. Are they also going to be on the training grounds in Chattanooga, or are they going to be training in Dalton still?
They're going to be training in Dalton. I know we've talked about with the COVID protocols when they allow us bringing them up to train with us to kind of work on things tactically. But okay. for the majority of the time, yeah, they'll be in Dalton.
All right, because I was just kind of wondering, that gives you more options to be watching things coming up because you mentioned some of your top academy players, but then you've got players in U23, and I know that they can't just switch over and play week by week in between them. But in the first year, we had some players come in from our U23s. So when you're working out on your training with coach, how do you and Coach Jimmy divvy up the responsibilities? And so for those of us who are not in the know, so what do you do during the week and what does Coach Jimmy do during the week when you work with our players?
Yeah, so, you know, Jimmy sets the plan. Jimmy sets the entire plan of kind of what we want to work on that week. And you know, especially in preseason, we're getting down our playing principles. So Jimmy will kind of set the overall plan. I'll look at the workload of it, kind of the physical performance part and what kind of fits best on which days to get the guys prepared the best fitness-wise. So like work to rest ratios and spacing and what kind of areas we're going to work in. And then from there with the activities, then we, you know, Jimmy kind of looks at, okay, which activities he maybe wants me to run versus which ones that he wants to take control of. So, you know, Jimmy lets me do a lot, to be fair to him. You know, he gives me a lot of responsibility in the trainings, which I appreciate. And, you know, I think for him, it's, you know, he's able to see the big picture and he's able to kind of set the tone for the entire team that way.
Looking at the soccer chat podcasters, what do you think is a good work to rest ratio for us?
Work to rest ratio. I don't know. I've been playing a lot of pickup around here lately, so I don't know. I gotta see you guys play first.
That's fair.
That's fair enough. Yeah. So actually, our expectations, I think, for a lot of Americans now, on what happens on the training ground comes from watching Ted Lasso. And so how accurate, how much is what happens in between matches close to what we see on the screen on Ted Lasso?
I don't know. I haven't seen enough of it. I keep hearing about it, but I haven't seen enough of it, unfortunately. I think, though, it's really far away. I think it's not as luxurious as maybe everybody thinks. But I keep hearing I got to get some tips from Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
That's what you keep telling me.
Coach Jimmy's working you too hard. He won't even let you watch Ted Lasso. Wow,
borrow his login. That's the thing. You got to shoot him a text when we're done and say, hey, can I borrow your Apple login?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to text him. I'm going to text him right now. That's a good idea.
So I know that they're continuing to make improvements with CHI Memorial. Now, of course, a lot of us fans, we're focused on things that will be there on game day for us. But what improvements have been made there for the training facilities for this year that maybe you didn't have or you've improved over the last year or two?
So the stadium's looking amazing every day. Every day we show up to the stadium, it's looking better and better. It's looking more complete, and I can't wait. I can't wait till the lights are on and we're playing in front of you guys. But yeah, so for the training facilities, I mean, they've added more equipment. For example, you know, now we have the GPS. If you see pictures of the guys are all wearing the vests that look like bras.
Yeah.
So that's helping us kind of make sure the intensity is right and they're training at intensities that are at a match or more in terms of their running volume. So that's been massive, to be honest. I don't know how many teams in League One actually have that. So it's, for us, it was a huge upgrade for the club. Also just more equipment, you know, they've given us more and more equipment that Jimmy and I have asked for just around the training ground. That's about it. Plus we're also working out at D1 now.
Oh, okay.
So that's a great facility. D1's been amazing for us. You know, we're there twice a week, and the guys love it. You know, the guys love it. We're able to shoot over there right after training and get a good lift in. The facility's been great. So that's been some really good additions, to be honest.
Now, you got your start playing. Of course, you were in the youth academy at Atlanta Fire, and then you went to college in Birmingham with the Blazers where you played. And, of course, now while you were there, there was changes. You guys used to play at the West Campus Field, correct?
Yep, that's right.
And
yep.
But they've made a huge – I'm not sure. Have you seen the BBVA field?
Yeah, we actually played a preseason match there last – after the COVID, before the season started up again. Last summer we played there. And, yeah, I've been around it anyways. Unbelievable. I can't believe that wasn't up when I was there. I went back there and I was just, I don't know. I didn't know whether to be mad or happy or what, but it's a great facility they have.
So have you now last year, of course, you traveled with the team. So what are you seeing as positive steps on improving soccer stadiums or stadiums that they play soccer? And are there any that you certainly wouldn't ever want to ever play at yourself?
You know, I don't think there's been any that I wouldn't wanted to play in. I mean, I think just the level in America in general is just getting so much better every year. I mean, you look at our stadium, what they're doing. Our stadium's going to be the best stadium in League One by far, if not one of the best in the championship. It's every year. I mean, you look at the facilities, you look at the academies, the youth. I was talking about it with a friend the other day. I mean, when I was growing up playing for Atlanta Fire, it was, you know, we trained a couple of days a week and that was it. And now these kids are, you know, at full professional academies, getting looked after 5 days a week in a you know, professional environment. So it's just, I think the future is really bright for American soccer.
So talking about future in the academy again, of course, we had a historic day. The first player from the Chattanooga Red Wolves Academy, Christian Zaragoza, signed with the team. Tell us a little bit about Christian and what you guys are expecting to see him do this year.
Yeah, Christian's been great. You know, first few days in preseason, I think he texted me the night before he came in and said, "Hey, coach, just double checking on the training time. I'm a little bit nervous." And so we just told him, "Listen, man, enjoy yourself. You know, take it all in." And he's done that. He's been good. You know, he's held his own. He hasn't looked out of place, I think. And the boys have took him in well. You know, he's having to do a little bit of extra stuff like a rookie does, and maybe having to take a little bit of crap from the other guys, but he's it's all part of the process, and he's done great. Honestly, like soccer wise, he's done awesome, and I think this season we want to see him develop. If he can contribute to the first team, we're going to give him opportunities. If he's able to contribute, there's no, you know, age is just a number to us. If he can get the job done, we want him to contribute. So we're excited for him and excited for his future.
So they said with this academy contract that he is going to be able to maintain college eligibility, committed to play at NC State in the fall. So right. Is there any kind of cap or on, you know, like games or minutes or something that you guys have to be mindful of as you put him through training and see maybe he's got an opportunity to go out on the field and prove himself?
You know, I'm not sure about all the compliance stuff. I know, you know, Jimmy Weekly does so much for the club soccer-wise and operations. So I know he's the one that kind of makes sure he's looked after that way. So I'm not exactly sure, but I know there's other teams in the league that also had academy players that signed with them that went on to play college, that even played games. I think one played against us last year in our opener. One academy player played against us, and he went on to play in college. So, you know, I think he'll be looked after 100%.
Yeah, and it makes it even more of an awesome opportunity in that he's able to get this kind of experience and still be able to have that college experience as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, his level is going to go up, and I think, you know, when he goes to a college environment, what an opportunity he has. Now he's going to go into that environment and think, "Oh man, this is easy. I got this," I think, because now he's with, you know, 25, 26, 29 year old men every day. And he's going to go into a college environment, I think, with a lot of confidence and a lot of, he's going to go in almost as an experienced guy now rather than a regular freshman.
So we've got upcoming preseason games taking on Atlanta United. Of course, everyone with season tickets is going to get to go to CHI Memorial and see the progress and see what you guys are kind of planning. Talk about the two games coming up with Atlanta United and Birmingham. What are you guys expecting to see and accomplish?
Yeah, so, I mean, the first thing, what everything's around is our game model, you know, our playing style. We want to make sure with the new guys that we're developing that every day. So I think that's, you know, me and Jimmy are really big on giving the guys the same information all the time and making sure the principles are very clear to them. So the first thing that we're going to look at is just checking the understanding of what we've been working on every week. And then I think secondary is the fitness. You know, I think you'll see in the Atlanta game where we're going to ease guys into it, you know, where no guys are going to be playing 90 minutes or anything crazy like that. And then Birmingham, you know, it'll be a week later, the guys will be a little bit more ready physically. So we're hoping to keep pushing those fitness levels as we get into Birmingham and tactically as well.
So how ready do you think we are for this Saturday? And so our mindset wise, do you think they've got their game faces on?
Oh, mindset-wise, mindset-wise, the guys are there. To be honest, me and Jimmy were talking about it the other day. I think, you know, we almost have to hold the guys back sometimes. This is a very, very energetic group, a very competitive group. I mean, the sessions are very feisty in a good way. So, yeah, mindset-wise, competitiveness, I think the identity of the team is exactly what we want. So, mindset-wise, we're there. Like I said, there's still things that the guys are going to have to grow together and develop throughout the preseason, but yeah, I just got a smile on my face just thinking about it, to be honest, because the mindset of the group is unbelievable.
Well, I mean, when we look at the signings, we see a lot of things very front-loaded. I think it's the forwards and the attacking midfielders that get our attention, but we've also had a lot of signings for defenders, and of course that's falls into your area of expertise. So what changes do you think we're going to see on the back line compared to last year?
That's a tough one. I mean, we're going to change a few things that we did and some of the way that, you know, some of the ways that we built out, but I don't think you're going to see a ton of changes. You know, we're still returning a lot of players on the back line.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of the personnel, you're not going to see too many changes on Saturday, and the style is going to be very attacking still. There may be a few things tactically we do different, but the style is going to remain. You know, we want to play high tempo. We want to go at teams. We want to make things happen. So in terms of that, you know, should look pretty similar anyways.
Okay.
All right. I mean, one final thing that I wanted to ask about. So, of course, we had some heartbreak in U.S. soccer with the Olympic club not qualifying. What do you think was the biggest factor in preventing that team from being able to qualify for the Olympics?
Oof, man. It's there's a lot of talk right now about that, and it's I don't even know what it is. I mean, I think a lot of people are pointing to kind of the mindset of those players that were there, and it's tough for me to say that without being there with them. You know, I know what I was able to see on TV and what I heard from the coach and everything like that, but it's for whatever reason, we didn't get the job done. I mean, I think, you know, I keep saying, the U.S. for me is in a good place developmentally. We're putting money into the youth players, and we're going to get there. But, yeah, I don't know if we're starting to miss that grittiness maybe that the old U.S. teams had, and how are we developing that in the academies as well. You know, I know it's something that we talked about a lot before when I worked in the academy. How do we develop players? Because we give them so much nowadays. They come to nice facilities and they have nice training gear and all these things. But how do we develop a sense of hunger in these players as well? So I think, yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I can't give you a more concrete answer.
No, that's all right. It's interesting. There seems to be this talent gap of, you know, there's tons of players who were, you know, Olympic eligible guys like Weston McKinney and Gio Reyna, you know, just guys that are playing at top clubs in Europe that, you know, weren't included in that tournament. And so it's just interesting about that kind of, you know, the second level of players that they brought just didn't have that same quality. And it was kind of disappointing to me. I remember turning to my wife and be like, you know, these guys are all still on professional contracts, and yet they're still, it looked kind of sloppy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great point. Yeah, I mean, you heard the coach say it himself. He said technically, they just weren't good enough on the day. So it's it's a head scratcher, you know. We don't want to get ourselves into the same situation that some of these other countries have got into, like Holland and these countries that are now struggling now with the first team, with the full team. So I think it's something to be nervous about. But, you know, overall, I think we're in a good place, and we just got to stick to one philosophy and make sure that we're not just jumping around every year. You know, where if things don't go well and it doesn't work out for 1 year, that we completely change things. I think we just got to keep refining what we do and,
yeah,
and, you know, keep helping the boys.
All right, Jeff, you got anything else?
Yes, one last thing. And when we look at your CV and look at your background, you only played in the U.S., professionally in Atlanta, but most of your time was played in Finland.
Yep.
And so I got to ask you, how big of a deal is Pukki, and was he a diva?
Pukki, I'm actually the godfather of Pukki's twin sister's baby. So Pukki's he's kind of like a family. He's really good friends with my wife. His sister are really good friends with my wife. And what a guy, the most humble guy you guys would ever meet. He is how he looks, you know. He looks like a humble guy, and that's how he is, man. He's an absolute legend, and everybody loves him. I mean, what a guy.
Very cool. Thank you for that. Thank you.
Yeah.
All
it
right.
Would have been a disappointment if I said he was a big jerk, huh?
No, I wouldn't have believed you.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, we thank you so much for your time. We know that it's a busy schedule right now. We're very excited to come out and cheer you guys on Saturday. So thank you very much for the time, Coach.
Awesome. Look forward to seeing you guys there. Thank you for having me.
Wow, that was a really good interview. Thanks, guys, for that. I truly, truly enjoyed it.
That was a good one. It's too bad you were too afraid to be part of the interview, Adam.
Yeah, it's either that or family commitments. It's one of the two.
Well, I mean, your family normally pays me to hang out with you, so I can't imagine that it's really the family commitments that are the issue.
It's money well spent.
Good old Coach Sawchak, who is a godfather to the Pookie family. Who would have known? Who would have thought that?
Yeah, that was quite a reach.
That was awesome.
I mean, was that just was kind awesome. Of, you just randomly were like, hey, maybe this most popular Finnish player ever and reached
the
for
only,
it?
The only Finnish player that any of us could think of is Pookie. And so I just threw that out there just to throw him off or just to have a little giggle. And I had no expectation that was going to be his answer. So that was wild.
All right. Well, let's take a quick peek at international soccer. So, Jeff, your team was no help at all. No help whatsoever. As you guys fell to West Ham, allowed them to leapfrog us in the table.
You mean the West Ham got their first double on us since the 1930s? You mean that
wow.
match? So like, just before we went out, we found that Johnny, who finally came back after his ACL, he had injured his ACL again as well as an MCL. And just hours before they were going to come out, Bali's COVID test came in because he was off with Ivory Coast on an international. I don't think it was a qualifying international, just an international friendly. And, of course, he's got COVID. And Gio Moutinho was also out, which we had expected because we heard that there was some things happening in Portugal. So now we have no defenders, and for some reason, I usually do not speak negative about Nuno, but for some reason he decided he was going to play four in the back and rather than three in the back. And what that means is when you say three in the back, you have the three fullbacks and the two wingbacks, but instead you had the two wingbacks be left backs and right backs and only the two center backs. And so we're already weakened in defenders, which I realize that's numbers, but it gave us more attacking options. And even Fabio Silva, our $40 million teenager, he beautiful goal, but our back end was wide, wide open. And we were just completely disorganized. It was embarrassing. And
so
yeah.
That's one of those games that the stats really lie to you, right? You had 20 shots to their 9. You had 5 on target to their 6, which is roughly the same. 67% of possession to their 33. 628 passes to their 322. 87% accuracy to their 74. Like, every stat seems to say, oh, the Wolves won this, right? And then you get there and you're like, oh, wait, they scored 3 of this. They scored 50% of their shots on target. He almost made the comeback, right? I mean, you were there. Yeah. You're down 3-0. Arsenal knows exactly what it's like to be down 3-0 to West Ham recently. Difference is we came back. But, yeah, I mean, I watched that game, and I agree. There definitely was great opportunities for them in defense. But I think his goal of trying to get shots obviously happened. But 20 shots and only 5 of them to be on target is crazy.
Well, we had two different teams. There was such a gap between our back line and our midfielders trying to compensate in this wide open area. And we're very compact. We're usually hard to break down. No, we were just fluid and sparse in the back. But our attacking was like a different team. But that might work when you have a Raul or if you have a Jota who can consistently score goals. we usually have Neto, who's been our most consistent this year. So we have a lot of people willing to take shots and go on target, but just lack that finishing touch. So the positives were we got a really good move from Traore, who's not really been producing this year. Wonderful goal from Fabio Silva. But other than that, it was a lot of shooting blanks. And rather than setting up, it's just taking the quick one rather than – so we had – we were like scrambling. It's like we were making – we're like we didn't have a plan.
Well, so speaking of positives, let me talk about the positives from this Saturday's match against West Brom. And that was –
well, I'm done letting you ramble because that went forever talking about those positives.
So – yeah, Adam, did you see?
Yes.
Did you see who scored a goal?
I did.
Scored that first goal? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Three minutes later, it all changed though.
Did you see who yet again had a soft tissue injury? That's, do they not have pickle juice and bananas in East London or West London?
Orange slices.
Asking for a friend.
Yeah, it is crazy how often that seems to happen, and part of me wonders if it's because he's so wanting to prove himself when he's out there that he's overdoing it, because he hasn't, in my opinion, gotten the backing of his coach like people expected it to, with his coach coming from his former team where he shined. It's really quite surprising, but yeah, I mean it was a great follow up. It really was. He gets that keeper gets a little bit more hand on it, and that ball doesn't hit the post, but. Right place, right time. Great placement on the follow-up, but that was a good goal.
And he, of course, had his goal with the men's national team as well. So that, I was hoping, would give him confidence, allow him to come in. He looked good. Yeah. So, anyway. The 14 games since Thomas Tuchel has taken over, we are 10-4-1. We have allowed 7 goals. 5 of them in this one game to West Brom.
Yeah, from West Brom. And
West Brom, about 30% of West Brom's total goals for this year are against Chelsea.
For those of you that aren't huge EPL fans, so Chelsea is currently, until more US players end up on another team, they're currently Alex's favorite team. And they are currently sitting in 5th place. West Brom is in 19th place. And a full 8 points away from being able to be out of relegation. So they're in a bad spot, I think is a safe statement.
Yeah. It pretty well take almost a miracle for them to not get relegated. And they've had, for most of the season, they've had some of, even though they won more than Sheffield, they played worse than Sheffield for most of the season. So it's like they had their game of the year. So at least as bad and as frustrated and angry I am at the West Ham match, at least my friends also had horrible, horrible games.
I'm going to disagree with you. I don't think it was horrible for Arsenal.
There's really nothing nothing to be ashamed of when a mid-table team loses to the defending champion.
Well, here's why I don't think it's that bad of a deal for Arsenal. So say we won that game. Say it was the other direction. We'd be sitting at 45 points. We'd still be 7 points shy of fourth. But with the remaining schedule we have, I feel like our coach would be more likely to put his best players out there in a Premier League in hopes of catching that fourth spot than he is to focus on Europa, because we've got Sheffield United, who's in last, Fulham, who's in 16th. Everton, or I don't know if I may have, Newcastle 16th, but Fulham's way down there too. Everton, West Brom, Chelsea, who, you know, depending on who they decide, if they decide to play or not, is going to be the one hard game, and Brighton and Crystal Palace. So it's realistic that we could run the table, but I don't think even if we had won the game versus Liverpool, we would have made it to fourth. So I'm much happier that this, it's obvious, you're not getting to fourth, you're too far away, you are 10 points clear. Focus on Europa League. That's your one chance at getting European soccer next year. And the joy of winning another trophy when Tottenham doesn't. So,
well, there you go. So, I don't have much else international soccer. Do you guys?
Not for Premier
League. There were, of course, World Cup qualifiers. I didn't see if Ulrich played for Liechtenstein in this particular go-around.
I was just actually, was Liechtenstein even in? Who were they? Yeah, they're in Group J. They've lost all three. Mm. So
must not have had Ulrich in that case.
Yeah, well, Armenia seems to be leading there. So, but again, it's, you know, here's the funny thing is also at third place, and this is Germany. So Armenia and North Macedonia have more point or are above the table, if you will, over Germany right now.
Yeah, North Macedonia, surprising upset of Germany during this last round.
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of the thing. There were really not any sexy games, so there wasn't much to get too jazzed about with this last round. So we'll see how that plays out.
I think that I'm enjoying looking at Group F. Scotland's in there in second with 5 points. Israel is at four. Ooh. Austria at four. I think Denmark has won it pretty much. They're 3-0, 14-0, so 14 goals for, 0 against. But those other three teams.
That sounds like I got named as Denmark's coach on FIFA.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it'll just be interesting to see, like, what happens with that, right? Like, Scotland, Israel, and Austria are all sitting right there. Goal differential, Scotland's is up, you know, 4 goal differential. But still, I think it's going to be interesting. That's an interesting group. And then, of course, yeah, the idea that Germany is in third right now is below North Macedonia is entertaining, but won't last, but it's still entertaining.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to change. And poor Faroe Islands. They just got the draw with Moldova, and Moldova, not only do they only have the one draw, but their goal differential is -11. So things are not looking good for poor Moldova.
Well, spare a thought for Moldova if you can. And I think that takes us to our Biggles Wade report. So Biggles Wade is back. Biggles Wade United Ladies with a win over the weekend in a friendly. Biggles Wade United men's team as well going to be taking on Newport Pagnell-Town. This weekend in a friendly that they're going to have kind of a friendly tournament with some local teams through the spring. Unfortunately, right now, not allowed to have fans in the grounds, but it's just great for these young men who, you know, had essentially the better part of a season taken away from them because of this horrible disease. They're going to get a chance to get back out on the field and train with their teammates. And so congrats to you folks in Biggles Wade, and enjoy it. And yeah, that's your Biggles Wade report.
Very cool. Very cool.
You guys got anything else to share?
I think I've shared too much. And I'm going to regret it.
No, I got nothing. I'm good.
All right, then. We will see you folks at CHI Memorial Stadium on Saturday. And we'll catch up with you next week to talk about how that game went. Bye.